Once more onto the breach, dear friend.
Let's close the wall up with our English dead.
Here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Where the telephone numbers are, and you're welcome to give us a call if today is Saturday, April 23rd, 2016. Now, if it's some other day,
you're not gonna talk to us likely.
Well,
we may
you
not
can.
Be here.
It's just
if you're listening to it and it's another day, you're
right.
Either listening to a podcast or maybe a broadcast,
or you're delusional.
Well, we're all delusional.
Well, it could be delusional. I mean, it could be that you just don't know what day it is. But anyway, if where you are, you think it's April 23rd, 2016, you can give us a call in here. At area code is 254, and it's 773-1400. If it's some other day, you can call, but the odds are we will not speak to you live because we're not live. That means we're dead, I suppose, in a sense.
If you're, it's kind of the opposite of live.
Actually, I've been reading a little bit of Kurt Vonnegut, and
yeah.
So it's really hard. We could have become toilet plungers.
Could be.
Yes, aliens that look like toilet plungers.
Right.
Anyway, so you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. And we were having a good economics discussion about something before we were interrupted by the end of Fox News.
We're talking about wealth inequality in the United States in here.
We have been discussing it at great length, and we've concluded that there is wealth inequality in the United States. There has always been wealth inequality in the United States, and there probably will be wealth inequality in the United States in the future.
And
the faster technology changes, the more wealth inequality is generated.
Right. Inequality is one of those terms that doesn't fit well with capitalism. Or equality.
Actually,
doesn't fit. Inequality
yes,
fits great.
Yes.
Equality doesn't, because equality means everybody gets paid the same thing, no matter what they do.
And by the way, the Declaration of Independence is a wonderful ideological document.
Right.
But to say that all men are created equal is fundamentally flawed logic.
Well, it just depends on what equal means.
Right, and the idea of creating men.
Right. Men do not get created at birth.
They're
men
babies,
grow.
Right.
They grow into something.
And then you have the fact that there are also women.
Right.
And that there are people that the writers of the Declaration of Independence did not consider to be humans at all that
right.
We've now applied that term to.
So all that's saying is that today we look around and we say there are people that exist and some people have more money than others. That is, by definition, wealth inequality. But that's not necessarily a bad thing unless it becomes
excessive,
institutionalized, so that someone that has less cannot get more.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's a lot of recent studies coming out of the recession, this recovery that we've had coming out of the recession, that the wealth growing rate, this is one of those mixed statistics, the wealth has been grown more by the people that are the wealthiest. Okay? On the surface to that, it sounds like the wealthiest people make more money than the other people at a higher percentage. Well, there's a really fundamental problem to the logic there. We're looking back in time to say, starting in 2009, the people that have gained the most money are the wealthiest people today.
Duh.
Yeah, again, duh. It means that back then, how many of the people in 2009 that are wealthy today were wealthy then?
That's called
a better question.
That's called survivorship bias.
Yes, it is. And what it means is that the people that get wealthy obviously made more money than the people that didn't get wealthy.
But let
obviously.
Me, let me inject a little equality into this.
Okay.
I wrote this in the newsletter that I published yesterday, or we published yesterday, or we wrote it in the newsletter. I need to get that singular out of there. Anyway, there is a hedge fund out there that people with less than spectacular wealth can get into. And they're also, Blackstone is the company that has it. It's called Sinfina, where they got that, I don't know. But they also have an actual mutual fund that Blackstone has that enables you to invest in hedge funds. And Sinfina does that too. This is the fascinating thing. Yes, pure hedge funds tend to be used by people who are extraordinarily wealthy.
Doesn't mean that they do well.
But this is what – and what happened is last year in 2015, when Sinfina opened up at the beginning of 2015 – Sinfina, for the year, for the 12 months, gained 20%. And that made headlines towards the, actually by November, it had gained 23%. It dropped a little bit in December. And that made headlines. And by the way, the headlines, if you read the financial stuff like I do, you'll notice that they were proclaiming what a wonderful thing is, where the stock market in 2014 went nowhere, the bond market effectively went nowhere, no money to be made, and this one fund out there, this fund of hedge funds, made 20% by 23% by November, and money was pouring into Blackstone. Billions and billions of dollars are being pulled out of equity mutual funds and other places. And they were going into Sinfina and Blackstone's new fund. It was one of the fastest growing funds in terms of assets under management in 2015. And then
just real quick,
2016. Yes, what?
Sinfina.
Yes.
It is in Esperanto. Are you familiar with
Esperanto? Yeah,
it is.
In Esperanto. It's Esperanto. The universal language that isn't.
Right. It's the intellectual language that nobody's picked up except
right.
for very few, very
and,
arrogant
and it means
people.
Something. What does it mean?
Infinity.
Okay. That's probably... That's
yeah.
it. Okay.
okay.
Anyway, so Sinfina was this big success. People piled their money into it. We're really, really happy because they were really rich and they were able to invest in places where other people aren't able to. It's a traditional story, right?
Traditional stuff.
Now, here's
yeah.
here's the bottom line. Let's just take 2015.
Okay.
Well, for starters, they didn't make 20%.
No.
Because
no.
in hedge funds, you get charged 2% of assets under management plus 20% of gains.
Yep.
So they lost... Of that 20% that was made last year,
they actually lost one-fifth of it.
4% because of the gains and 2%. So they actually lost.
Now, the 2% isn't just on the gains. It's on the entire amount.
Yeah, right.
So the 2% is actually 2% larger.
2% plus 20%.
So that 2%, depending on the size
roughly,
of the portfolio.
Roughly, they lost They lost about probably 7 to 10%.
Right.
Okay.
7 to 10%
right.
of the gain didn't happen. So they really made about...
10%.
10%.
Yeah.
10 to 13%.
Okay. And then this year so far, the stock market is up, depending on whether you're talking about the Dow Jones Industrial Average or the S&P 500, either about 1.5% or 2.5% or something like that. Okay.
Right.
Well, Sinfina just reported it's down 15%.
Right.
So,
and they're not giving the money back for, you know, if
right.
they're charging 20% of the gain. They don't give you 20% of the loss back. I don't understand that. But, you know, they don't do that.
But they also, because it's a quarter into the year, they've already charged 0.5%. So
yes.
it's really down. It's really not down 15%. It's down 15.5%. So, first off, they made 10% last year. And they have lost 15.5% this year. And because gains and losses are separately, they really, right now, sitting there with something approaching a 20% loss, if they had invested... At the beginning of last year, if they piled in when everybody else piled in,
then they're down. Their portfolio
is probably down 20%.
Down significantly.
And this is the point that I wanted to make. The stock market for the last 2 years has had almost no return. Depending on when you invested and a whole series of other things, you could have a little bit of return or you could actually have a loss in the stock market if you'd been invested in. Let's just say that you, and we do not recommend these, by the way, but let's just say you got a really low-cost S&P 500 index fund or something, and you'd invested in it last year and this year, and you'd been invested in it for 2 years now, and you would look at it, and you would probably say, oh, well, guess what? I'm a little bit up, a little bit down by about where it started.
You're not
and
down
you're
20%.
Thinking, but you're thinking, man, it's been a long time since I've seen any gains, and if you've got money coming out of it for something, like you're doing a systematic withdrawal or something, then you're going to see that the balance has shrunk a little bit. And you're unhappy because you've gone a couple of years now with no gains.
With shrinking balances.
Right.
So one part up, way up, and then way down,
mm-hmm.
and then
and
coming back.
You, and if you've got other things in there like bonds and things like that, you may see other losses. So the bottom line to it is you're probably in a regular, normal, rational investment portfolio, not particularly happy about your past 2 years' performance.
But if you're an ultra-wealthy person
right.
in a hedge fund that's supposed to be super sophisticated, you're really upset because you're way down.
Well, actually, as yet, they haven't had cash flows out. This is the interesting thing. In the first quarter
mm-hmm. of this year,
in their hedge fund, Blackstone does hedge funds and alternative investments, which, by the way, run, don't walk away from alternative investments.
Yes.
And they're the biggest purveyor of alternative investments out there. they acknowledged that their alternative investments across the board have lost money. But in the first quarter, at the end of the first quarter, they wound up with 11% more money under management than they had at the beginning of the year.
Right. So they lost money in their existing portfolio, significantly lost money.
But wound up with more money.
More people are buying into them because it's such a hot topic right now. If somebody says, how many alternatives do you have in your portfolio? It's, alternative, what is that?
And the point is, it's
kind of like rock music in the 1990s, where you're like, what kind of music do you listen to as a young rebel? Well, I listen to alternative.
Here is what investors do and what they tend to do. Morningstar had a great article on it if you had to be a subscriber. You got a chance to read it, which is that they tend to look at what in the preceding economic period, 2015 or last quarter, whatever did well, and they sell out of whatever did not well in the last economic reporting period and buy into whatever did really well in the last economic reporting period, which is of all the possible investing strategies, the common ordinary person who doesn't have access to Warren Buffett can use is the worst possible investment strategy. But this is what probably a majority of amateur market timer investor movers or rounders do is they look at whatever did well in the last reporting period in their 401k. And they move to that, and they move out of whatever didn't do well.
And just to see that you've probably done it yourself, listeners, when you get a piece of paper or an electronic transmission from the 401k, assuming you have one, and you look at it, and you look at all this list of things, and you go, I don't really know what any of these are.
But this one over here is reporting that it's paying a higher interest rate.
This one just made 12%, and that one made 6%. Well, which one am I going to choose?
How about the one that made 12 and the one that lost 6?
Right. And people go, whoa, that one's losing money. I don't want to be in that one. I want to get in this one that is making money. It's got 12% growth in there. I'm going to get in. What that is by definition, buying something that's high and avoiding something that's low. Now, there's more research needed than that, but that's at the very simple level what people do regularly, and that's market timing. Or if they were in that lower position and they get this option, they lost 6% last year, and they say, well, man, I can't keep doing that. And they say, what's doing well? Oh, that thing over there that's making 12%. And then they move. That, by definition, is market timing.
This thought process is one that comes from bank accounts.
Yeah.
In other words, if the bank is paying 4%, and they promise you to pay 4%, and you
what
go in.
What bank are you using? Wow.
You're
using the bank of the past.
Hey, No.
The bank of 20 years ago.
No. Not actually. What it was is if you invest in savings, money market funds in Kenya.
Oh, Kenya. Right.
They pay like 4% a year.
There's a lot of safety there in Kenya. I mean, no, there's.
Of course, they have
a whole lot of safety.
They have 8% inflation right now, but that's beside the point.
So what you're really doing is losing 4%. Okay,
which, by the way, follows right on down the list of this. But the point is that if you look at something and you say this category right here is making money, and you're talking about investing, you've just lied to yourself.
Yes, it was making money, not making
money. You have to leave the making out. It made.
It made.
That's
money.
Like saying, and it's just like looking at a cornfield and said, that field is growing corn when it grew corn last year. No, it's not growing corn because next year there may be no corn in that field. It may just be weeds. So you invest in a field because it's growing corn. Well, somebody's got to plant the corn, and corn can lose money.
I understand that in Colorado there's a lot of weed planting going on. They're not planting corn so much as weed in a lot of places. It's just growing weed.
It's more in California than Colorado, but I got you. Okay.
Yeah.
But the point is that and I say all this because what we've also seen is in the week ending Wednesday of last week, and there was 7 days.
How does it end on Wednesday?
Because when they report mutual fund cash flows, they report them as of Wednesday.
Because
of
that makes total sense.
It gives them a couple of days to figure it out when they report it on Friday.
And then they don't have to work on Friday.
They work Thursday and Friday trying to get the numbers together.
For next Wednesday.
Last Wednesday.
So they get last Wednesday's numbers out Friday.
Right. It takes 2 days to get the numbers out. Anyway.
Which makes total sense again.
What happens, well, it does. It takes a little while to compile the numbers. But what we're seeing is that in mutual funds, equity mutual funds, and particularly U.S. equity mutual funds are seeing outflows of cash. They're seeing people selling their money and moving out this last week. Now, I think it's a reaction to the fact that people have got the inter-quarter statements and right. they saw that equities didn't do particularly well during the quarter.
Things are down. I'm going to move over to those things that were doing great.
And one of the things I wrote in the letter is, and I think it's important to recognize this, is mutual fund cash flows are a strong contrarian indicator. In other
right.
words, if...
Yeah, this is an example. 2009 is a great example.
Right.
2009, bottom of the market, mutual fund outflows from equities, stock sales were at absolute record numbers. People were saying, I'm out of here. And that's a contrarian indicator because that's the bottom of the market. That's when, you know, we see that happen and we go, okay, that's, there's a huge number of people mm-hmm. leaving equity positions. That means the last sellers have sold.
And I'm reading a lot in things like Barron's and really thoughtful publications that, well, you know, the stock market is probably fairly priced. It may be overpriced. We don't see any reason that the stock market will go up. That's what all the prognosticators are
saying. Right. That's a safe thing to say because if you say that and it goes down, you say, see, I told you.
But we got another indicator. And the other indicator is when the retail amateurs are panicking and running out of the stock market, that is generally an indication that the stock market, A, is low, and B, will rise in the near future because whatever that bunch of investors does as a group...
is generally the wrong thing.
Yeah, it is. It's just the wrong thing. Wherever they're fleeing from, I just dangled a participle.
That's a dangling participle, sir. You're going to be fined for that.
Then is where there is probably opportunity, and whatever they're fleeing to is probably dangerous.
Not a dangling participle.
Another one, yes. But in common vernacular.
Right. Where do I send the ticket to?
To where?
Fine.
To which? To whom?
To
and
whom?
To why?
And to where?
And so where else are they going? They're going into bond funds. They're yep. putting their money into bond funds.
What we know about bonds right now, interest rates are low.
Yes.
Anybody have any arguments with that? If you might argue,
well,
if
there
you
are
have
people.
A credit card that is charging you 29% interest, though that is not a low interest rate. But across the board, in a more general sense, interest rates are low.
And there are people who are saying, yes, but they're going to go a lot lower.
It is possible to go really, really into negative territory. We
yeah.
didn't know that before. But what the central banks are mm-hmm. saying is you can't go too far or you're going to really, really mess things up.
There are people in the United States, not very many, but there are people in the United States who are saying, yes, we know interest rates are really low, but we are going to go into negative territory just like Europe has and Japan has. Now, this is the fascinating thing. That means deflation.
Mm-hmm.
The same people who are saying that and being quoted today mm-hmm. are the people who in 2009
were
saying we're going to have runaway inflation.
Yeah.
So we got another contrarian indicator. Rates are almost, given the unemployment rates, which are amazingly low, given the fact that I had an interesting conversation yesterday, a couple of people.
Interest rates will go up.
When the people I had the conversations with are people who recently were job hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And what they discovered is it's not a matter of there's a lot of people trying to get one job. There were a lot of people trying to recruit them for different jobs.
Yes.
And they were in a bidding war against each other, which means...
it's a hirees market.
Wages,
it's the new employees market, right. not the employer market at this
wages
point.
Wages are going to start up. Inflation is going to start up. And interest rates are going to rise. Now, when that happens, bonds fall.
Yeah. So let's go back to that original premise. Some people think that interest rates are going to go down. The vast majority of people, and by vast majority, we're talking about really vast majority of
really?
People that are really, really vast. That's a technical term.
That's squinting modifier.
Right. The squinting modifier of people,
really, right.
of really big, of all of these people that are moving to bonds, the vast majority of them don't know what happens to bonds when interest rates go up.
Well, if interest rates rise, obviously the bonds go up.
Well, that's what they're thinking. So why would interest rates going up have anything bad to do with me if I'm in bonds? And the reason it's bad for you is because if you bought bonds now and interest rates go up, they don't go up on the bonds you already own. Those bonds suddenly become less attractive because other bonds are paying a higher interest rate. You're not getting the higher interest rate because you bought at the lower interest rate, which means you want to sell the things you have to get the better bonds. They're paying more. But what you'll find is that people don't want to buy your bonds unless you start discounting your bonds so that the amount that they pay you and the amount of interest they earn on the bonds starts being comparable to what they could buy elsewhere. And that's one of those things. If you drop the price of the bond far enough, it's still paying the same interest rate on the total amount. It means that the interest rate is going up.
So if you're tempted, and I have been, to run over and jump into bonds, let me tell you something. The 10-year Treasury note is the benchmark for interest rates in the United States.
The 10-year Treasury note is the U.S. Treasury's debt, United States government debt that's maturing in 10 years.
Right. So the 10-year Treasury note, as of Friday, was yielding 1.88 point something percent.
Now, 1.88 point? How many decimal points do they
1.88
have?
1.88 something percent.
Okay. All right. That's the point you were trying to make.
But on February 11th, it was yielding 1.64.
Interest rates went up.
Interest rates went up. Now, this is interesting. This
only
is
by 0.14%. Yeah, but that's point a movement.
But that is like 15.6% of the total.
This is in reaction to the Federal Reserve saying that they're probably going to raise interest rates again sometime later this year.
This is the point. It has nothing to do. This is people think that a 10-year interest rate has something to do with the Federal Reserve.
It doesn't. You're right.
This is the point. It is a market-based movement, people buying and selling treasuries. But this is the point. The change in value of the 10-year Treasury note went down about 15% while the S&P 500 went up 15%.
Right.
And
now, if you wait for maturity, you still get all the money back, the full face amount. But if you paid $1,100 for a $1,000 bond,
but you can't
you're going to lose that $100.
You can't wait for maturity in a mutual fund.
Correct.
So here's my point.
The manager might, but you can't.
It's really, 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 really hard to find an index someplace that tells you the value, the change in value of a 10-year treasury. Now, they're out there, but they aren't published in the papers. You have to go to a special website to see them. And this is the point. If on February 11th you had bought into when Bill Gross was saying the market's got a lot further down to go before it can possibly recover.
And you said, well, I don't want to get in the market because Bill Gross is saying that I'm going to get into a treasury note.
Had you bought into the stock market, again, that's hypothetical. Let's put it simply, the S&P 500 is up about 15.5% since February 11th. Your 10-year Treasury note, which is ultra-safe and pays you interest, is down almost exactly the same percentage.
15-point-something percent.
And
down.
This is a...
It's absolutely classic.
The markets are returning to normal, but this is an indicator of just how wrong the typical mutual fund investor, who, by the way, typically is in his or her 401k doing this, has been, because it was February 11th when the cash flow turned around and the money started into bonds out of 401ks and out of stocks.
So the stock market
started rising as soon as the amateur investors started leaving the stock market.
Right, and the bond market started dropping as soon as the amateur investors started coming into it.
Which is just
purely classic. It is pure classic. I mean, if we were to, this is the reason for wealth inequality, is this kind of decisions. If you're making decisions with your money, you need to do, particularly money that's supposed to be your source of income later in life, do the same research on that money that you do on your current employment, because it's going to be your future employment if you do it right.
No, people have got that message, I think. They've got it clearly. As they get older, they know that they should buy at Lowe's.
Buy at Lowe's and sell at Home Depot.
Actually,
No.
Actually, they should work at Lowe's. That's their...
Yeah. Okay. Greet people. And so,
no, not greet people. Actually, the workers in Lowe's are mostly retired people.
Right.
And, of course, now the baggers, if you go down to Georgetown at the HEB, the Super HEB just outside of Georgetown, you notice the baggers are not teenagers.
Yes, I did notice that. They were teenagers a long time ago, though.
Yeah, but today they're
they've experienced
successful retired people.
Right.
Successful. Anyway, and they're doing it just because they want to do something with their time.
Why wouldn't they?
Hey, I got some good news.
Good.
It's some really good news.
Are you going to tell us, or are you just going to tell us that you have it?
I've got it.
Okay. That's diesel, very nice to know that.
Diesel prices, diesel fuel prices in the United States have been declining to the point where they are now, in many areas, falling below that of regular gasoline.
Hold on. Let's wrench our shoulders out of socket again while we pat ourselves on the back. This is a simple reaction to the refining process. Gasoline took a lot longer to fall than oil did because the refining process has a couple of months of lag time. And diesel has more lag time than gasoline. So what we're seeing is the same drop in diesel that we saw in other areas.
Actually, that's not what's going on. What's going on is there is a high demand for gasoline because as gas prices dropped,
people are driving more.
People were driving more where there was this demand. And this is an interesting point. Diesel is a byproduct of the manufacture of gasoline.
Correct.
And
that's what I mean about the process takes longer.
So,
than that
but I happen to drive a truck that burns diesel.
Yeah. So it's very happy for you. So that's why you're saying it's good news. And to me, it's like, I don't care. Except the long-term benefit to the rest of us is that there's a couple of things to know first off. The railroad capacity is pretty close to full. You've got a train carrying stuff from one end of the country to the other. It's pretty much full. If you're buying something that would normally be on that train but can't get on the train because it's full, you're buying it with a little added cost
for diesel,
and that means that little added cost is going down. There's a lot of things that are impacting the market, the economy, gas prices being down, diesel prices being down, jet fuel prices being down. We're going to start to see the benefit from that rather than the problem from that. For the first and last quarter of last year, it was all the problems that people were talking about.
It's kind of like the Old Testament. We're going to see a lot of prophets.
Right. We'll see a lot of prophets. They'll be wandering around.
Okay. The other thing, last year, as the gasoline prices fell dramatically towards the end of the year, we were saying that the economy should get a shot in the arm because we should see dramatically increased economic activity because the typical American consumer was having more money available to them because they weren't spending on gasoline. And while it happened a little bit, it was not anywhere near as large as I or Jake or any other economist forecast. Well, now we know why, by the way. There's been a lot of surveys saying, okay, folks, what did you do with the extra money you had? And this is their answer. Interest rates are so low.
You don't want to put them.
That we're socking it away in savings.
Right.
And we're paying off. And now, this is really silly. We're paying off debt and we are putting it in our 401ks because we're seeing no gains over there. And we're really concerned about having enough money in the future. So we're saving more money because interest rates are lower, which just confounds economists.
Right. Well, it confounds economists, except if they're behavioral economists, it doesn't confound us at all. Mm. We look at it and go, yep, predictably irrational.
But it isn't irrational because the point is, with a very, very slow growth of investments and savings because of no interest, they realize subconsciously,
you've got to do more.
Intuitively, they've got to save more money. And by the way, this is something
correct.
That is echoing around the world. It's going on in Europe big time. It's going on in Japan. Japan anticipated going to negative interest rates would force people to spend their money because they're actually being charged to save money.
Right.
So you know what people did? They saved more money.
Yeah. Put it away. It's going to cost more to save it, so you better put more in there.
That's and the economists who came up with the idea, by the way, negative interest rates, as it turns out, are not a good idea.
There's something that happened in Brazil about 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
There was an experiment done by four American-trained economists from Brazil.
Were they feeding monkeys?
No monkeys involved.
Okay.
What they did is the real, the Brazilian currency, was...
That's real money.
Real money.
Yeah.
Was inflating at about 15% a year.
That's real inflation.
And if you're an Austrian economist, you don't even believe that inflation exists. That's
okay.
The inflation theory is what it's called.
Okay.
Okay. So inflation is happening at a high rate. These four economists who have just gone to some pretty amazingly good American universities come back and say, we have an idea, and the oddity here is that the government listened. But the government listened and said, okay, what do you propose we do? And they set up a completely fake currency, a currency that was not real.
Kind of like the Esperanto language.
Right. But they got everybody, through a government decree, to put two prices on all the products. One price was for the fake currency, and the other price was for the real currency. And as they went along, as they're looking at the price that gets changed every day is the currency that they were using every day. And I hope I'm not saying the wrong term for the currency, because that would take away from the
whole...
We'll just
call it the unreal.
Yes, real. It is correct. I knew I was using...
It's kind of like the currency in Thailand sounds like yacht.
Yeah, it's a bot.
It's a bot, but it sounds like yacht.
So
anyway, yeah,
the real is going up at the same rate. It actually increased its inflation rate. But this fixed currency, which was fake, nobody was trading it, only went up a little bit during that time period. It's a fake currency. The real currency is going up. Well, at the end of, I think it was 18 months, the end of 18 months, the real was redenominated to this new currency. The old currency was converted and inflation stopped.
Temporarily.
It stopped for a decade. It completely stopped. They went from, there's no other economic shift.
They've got it again now.
Right. They have it again now in a bad way.
Right.
But they could do this again. Well, the reality is that just like many other things, inflation is in our heads. If we expect that prices are going to be higher tomorrow, then we buy today, and so does everybody else. And that causes the prices to be higher tomorrow.
And
if we expect prices to be lower tomorrow,
we defer buying.
We say, I'm not going to buy today, which causes all of the vendors who just don't have anybody coming in the door because they're waiting for tomorrow
to lower their prices.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And the way to get out of it is to do something a little bit dramatic. Now, we're not having massive inflation or deflation here. We're kind of stagnating at around zero, a little bit of tiny amount of inflation. What we really want for a good growth in the economy...
But some aspects of the economy are in deflation.
Right. Some aspects are in inflation. Some aspects are in deflation. It's the average of it. I mean, the probably more of the big purchase items are in deflation, and more of the small purchase items are in inflation. But the average of it is about equal. So housing prices are starting to come back up. We're going to start seeing some inflation numbers there. But the food and energy prices are all over the place. Energy prices are down. Food prices are up. We'll expect banana prices to have some volatility for the next few years. If you like bananas,
anyway,
then you need to invest in GMOs.
You were saying what to do.
Yes.
About...
Well, the whole concept of the psychology behind deflation and inflation, it's really important to understand, and it has to shift in a way that's across the board. I think we're starting that in the United States. We have to get to a place where we are used to seeing a little inflation before it starts being accepted.
So the solution then in the United States.
The solution for what?
For our monetary problems.
Which ones?
I don't know.
We're not really having monetary. Europe is having it. Japan's having it. China's having
it.
Brazil's having it.
But the solution is obviously to get Andrew Jackson off the $20 bill and put Harriet Tubman on.
Which doesn't look like it's actually going to happen.
Yeah, $20 bill.
It doesn't look like it's actually going to
happen.
Really? Yeah, they mentioned it. Now the next day a headline came out that the Treasury said maybe it won't happen. This is the same thing that happened when they said they were taking Hamilton off of the 10.
Well, I think
it was a proposal that the Treasury Department was kind of putting out there to see what happened. And everybody got upset. Don't take Hamilton off. And then they said, well, what would happen if we put Tubman on there? It was a proposal.
This is on the $20 bill.
Right.
And I think it's official now.
Taking it off Andrew Jackson. Well, the headline the next day is it's not happening. Or
really?
Maybe not happening. The headlines are deceiving. I think it's still something that the Treasury Department is considering. But it's not something that they have made a decision on. And that's one of those things that the whole thing about Hamilton coming off was not a final decision because it didn't happen. They said, we're probably not going to do that now. And everybody says, they're not taking it off. Probably is a big word. It probably should be put in front of sentences more often. It would save a lot of arguments. Did you see I said probably going to be in front of this? Yeah, I see it. Okay, we've got some commercials to play.
We do.
Yes, and it's getting late in the hour.
Well, actually, the Treasury Secretary announced officially that Harriet Tubman will go on the $20 bill.
Okay.
It was a proposal for Andrew Jackson. Anyway, we do have some commercials to play. And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and the telephone number remains 773-1400, and the area code remains 254 if you'd like to give us a call and comment on anything we've been talking about or anything else that has to do with the economy or anything of that nature, or ask any questions. We'll be back on the other side after these important words from Town Square's sponsors. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and Jake McClure. And I want to disclaim that last ad.
Those of you that are listening on podcasts or on a rerun may not have heard it, but there's an ad that runs regularly on here that we don't like.
Yeah, there's one that basically says something about his dad losing all his money in the stock market crash of 2011.
2009. It took 5 long years for him to research how to avoid that.
And it's by ripping off a lot of people who send in for his free book.
Right. You send in for the free book, you get told to buy insurance, which has an extremely high commission on it.
Yeah.
And you can't get the money out any time in the next 15 years without paying out your nose for your own money back.
I'm just going to say, without directly quoting the commercial, there are at least 3 blatant lies in that commercial.
But he's allowed to say it because they have freedom of speech. And,
yes,
and the
right.
book is a freedom of speech thing.
Yes.
He's going to refer you to some people that are regulated, that are insurance salesmen, that are not allowed to tell you the same things that are in the book because they would lose their licenses.
And it's a really good way. You can call that telephone number if you want to, but it's a really good way if you want to lose a lot of money. No, you don't have to wait for a stock market crash to lose your money if you call that number.
You're right.
Whoa, there you go. That's how you avoid losing money the next time the stock market crashes.
Right.
You lose it to this guy first. Wow, what a deal. And there are people who get really upset, one, Lynn Woolley, when I say bad things about people who run commercials. But, folks,
they're not listening to this program anyway.
That's right.
There's a national company advertising on us, and we don't like the way that they're doing it.
There used to be a guy who sold a book and pushed it really hard called Wealth Without Risk. You know, she haven't heard from him in a long time. And there's a really good reason for that because I don't know if he went to prison, but I know he got hammered pretty
well. If you're a conspiracy theorist, you could just say
the government is trying
to stop the people from releasing the secret that the rich people know.
There is no such thing. It's impossible.
Ah, now you're part of the conspiracy.
To make above a zero return with your money.
Without more risk.
Some kind of risk. The issue is not that you're going to take risk. It's understanding the risk that you're going to take.
If someone tells
you properly managing that, you can manage most kinds of risks. There's some kinds you can't. You just need to stay away from.
And if somebody tells you there is no risk, but we're going to give you a higher reward, they're lying to you. They may not even know it, but they're lying to you. If they give you a reward, unless they're philanthropists, unless insurance companies are suddenly just going to give you more money than they make.
You need to be nonprofit in order to benefit from a philanthropist.
Right. And that's the point. I mean, you know, the people think that this is why the Nigerian prince general, whatever he happens to be in a given email, has gotten so many people to send him money. We all want somehow it to be recognized for our own unique something and be given lots of money for it. But if it's too good to be true, it probably is too good to be true.
The critical thing, if you're going to make money with your money at all points in history, is you either have to, well, in every case, you have to be willing to take a risk. For example, as I tell people very frequently, going to school, getting a college education, getting
a
master's degree is probably one of the highest return investments you could make if you do it correctly.
Yeah. It's also one of the worst things you can do if you do it incorrectly.
But you got to put money into it in advance. So there's this risk that you'll get the wrong kind of degree, or you'll bomb out of school or something.
And you still got all these debts to pay.
And you got the debts to pay. So there's a risk there. On the other hand, if you take a serious look at where job opportunities with good pay that are in a field that is satisfying to you are going to be for the next 20 years, it's not that hard to see where they are not going to be and avoid them. If you look into that area and you say, here is a field that I enjoy where they are begging people to go to work, and it doesn't seem to be any end of it because technology doesn't seem to be replacing that particular profession. It seems to be magnifying it. And you put your money and your time into developing a good education and a good apprenticeship in that area, that's probably the most effective investments you'll ever make, but it carries risk. For instance, I told a guy the other day, even with the advent of computers and everything else, we need more accountants today than we used to need. So if he gets a master's degree in accountancy, if he enjoys that area, if he enjoys accounting, man, somebody has got to audit the computers. And so there's probably jobs there. On the other hand,
it's a dual major of accountancy and programming.
Oh, man.
That person is so beyond he's going to she's going to make money anytime, anywhere for the next 40 years. You don't mix programming and accounting most of the time.
Right.
A programmer knows as much about accounting as anybody else, which is to say that's a negative amount.
And accountants know as much about programming as
a negative amount. So you put the two together and you could have a really, really profitable career.
Right now, the question for a lot of people is whether to leave their money in equity mutual funds or go hide in a money market or go put their money someplace else. And the answer is, over a long period of time, owning American corporations, owning shares in American corporations, widely diversified, presuming you do a reasonable amount of research and don't chase and do some reasonable things in there. Over a long period of time, in the United States of America, that has been the single greatest source of wealth. Nothing has changed there.
Yeah, well,
but there's
people
a risk.
Will say that things have changed, but they've been saying it the whole time. Not even that has changed.
What's the risk? Well, the risk is that you're going to see variance in the values in the market, and you have to have a lot of patience, because even though the stock market over a long period of time has an average annual return of 10% a year, it doesn't get it every year. It loses money. I mean, you'll see your values go down some years. You'll see them stay flat for years. And interestingly enough, study after study has shown you don't know. It is when you least expect it, the stock market will suddenly jump upward, and the only solution to it is to just be patient and wait until it happens.
And it's not magic. It's one of those things.
It is magic.
When you said that, studies keep showing this, that it's the least expected moment that the stock market goes up. Or very low expectation of a movement upward in the stock market.
The lower
when
the
it
expectation,
happens.
The higher the probability
it's
going to happen.
There's a reason for that. And it's kind of the same thing that causes inflation and deflation. If everybody expects the stock market not to go up, which is kind of the definition of least expectation for
which
it
is
going
where we are
up,
now, right?
Right. Then a lot of people try to leave the market. They say it doesn't look like it's going to do anything. I don't think the stock market's going up. They leave. We call that the last buyer has left. Last seller has left. That only leaves the people that either are not paying attention to the market,
which is the smart people,
right? They just say, "I don't care. Something's going on over there, and I'll look at it later." Or the people that really look at it and say, "This doesn't make any sense. The market's too low." So at that point, the next person that says, hey, I got some extra money from a tax return, or I've got a little money that I'm going to start putting into the market, they drop it in there, and all the people that were selling before and trying to get out aren't selling so much. Now they're buying from people that aren't really willing to sell, so the price goes up. If you're buying a circular saw from someone, and there's a lot of circular saws out there, and everybody's trying to sell them, you can get a really good deal on a circular saw. But once everybody, you've been, say Craigslist is showing all these circular saws, you've been watching it, and you wait a couple of months, and you say, I'm going to check it again, I need to get a circular saw, and man, they were so inexpensive last time around, and you see there's only one circular saw on Craigslist, and the circular saw price is almost as much as a new circular saw. Well, that's just because there aren't that many people selling, and maybe you're not the only person trying to buy it. So the price goes up. So when the market goes up unexpectedly, that's its nature. When people don't expect the stock market to go up, they get out of the market. Once the last people are out of the market, the next person who either accidentally or by design gets into the market, it causes the market to go up. And then everybody that's been sitting on the sidelines going, man, I'm going to wait for the stock market to go up before I invest, which is not smart. It means they're not in. They're waiting, and they start seeing the stock market go up, and they say, oh, I'm going to buy now. And then the other people that have been waiting for it to go up above that jump in too, and there's still people that have their money out on the sidelines that say they watch the market go way up, and they tend to get in once the market's all the way up. When everyone agrees that the market's only going to go up, they get in. And once everybody agrees that the market's only going to go up, that means it's going to go down. For the same reason, once everybody believes it's only going to go down, it goes up. So it's this opposite concept, because we build the environment. It's built on perception. That's all pricing is. What you're willing to pay for and what you're not. And if you hear about somebody making a big profit in the stock market, you're more likely to want to get into the stock market. What you don't know is that person that made the profit got in when you didn't want to, and that's why they made the profit. And we're about out of time.
Here we are, and you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and we are in the business of managing investment portfolios. And that's what we do professionally. We're a fee-only investment advisory firm. We are fiduciaries. And if you would like to contact us off the air, either about that or about the radio program or anything else you want to contact
us. If you have something you want us to talk about on the radio next week, that we're not going to be here next week. It's going to be a rerun. But the week after that will be a rerun, too.
You can always send us an email, and we'll just answer the email, too.
That is, if today is the 23rd of April, we're not going to be here in two weeks.
We will still answer the email, though.
Yes, we will.
And now, okay, so the telephone number, if you'd like to give us a call, and on weekends we have a voicemail, but during the week, live people answer the phone, is 254-947-1111, or?
If you want to reach us toll-free, you can, 1-800-914-7526, 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. You can email us directly, jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. And until next week, this has been The Personal Wealth.
News Radio 1400 KTEM. Serving Central Texas, KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.